Everyone be an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Tres Pinos. It's just south of Hollister. It's in the Central Coast. And then that's where my home group is. And then that's a Tres Pinos Sunday night. And I have a ranch about 20, 30 minutes south of that. And my sobriety age, June 26, 1981. I have a sponsor. I used to be Johnny Harris, and then he passed away. And then I got Brian in. He's kind of a local guy to me, and he's a different kind of a fellow, but he's just a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I applaud all you guys that were doing this thing this weekend. Not only were you listening to these great speakers, but you were doing most of the heavy lifting. Right? You know, cooking and cleaning and all that stuff. And, you know, to me, that is more of what makes things happen. That's more of what has helped me to stay sober over the period of time, is just to be active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't get that way because I magically had this idea. I was just watching around me, and I was watching people. And the ones that seemed to be a little lighter in their step, a little easier in their being, were the ones that were doing all this stuff. They complained about it all the time. In a joking way. But, you know, it's like my sponsor, Johnny, used to tell me, he says, you're going to be divinely inconvenienced. If you want this way of life, and you want the things that come with it, then just be prepared. It's going to be the way it is. We're not like well-adjusted. I was sitting there at the conference, and like the first people to go in the room are the ones that have to line up all the chairs perfectly, right? And then there's the ones that hate that, and they move the chairs around so the other ones have to move them back. And then there's the ones that tell the ones that hate that to go over there because they're doing it over there. And there's all this stuff going on. There's all this energy happening. And everybody's trying to get it done right. And, you know, that's not the way it's done. And, you know, and the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is in the middle of that, it's sort of like, okay. You know, it's a little bit, it's from the outside, it seems like a little bit of controlled chaos. But the reality is that we're God's kids. And just like any group of kids, you know, you're going to have your tussles and that sort of thing. I didn't know that when it came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't like people. Don't. They're confusing. I don't understand them. I don't get them. You got to act a certain way, and I never know how to act. You know, I'm baffled. I did really well in structured religion, you know, because then you would stand up, sit down, kneel, stand up, sit, you know, and you would say the same things. And I was kind of okay with that. But, you know, people in general, I was lost. You know, I didn't know how to socialize with other kids. I always seemed to miss the mark. And I don't know any of that stuff. I'm just a kid, you know. A lot of chaos in my family, mostly from my mother. She was the alcoholic. She was the kind of alcoholic that would get about 2 inches from your nose and shout you down until your eyes roll back in your head. And then she goes, I won that argument, you know. And, you know, it was just tense a lot of times. And it doesn't make me an alcoholic. It just makes you duck when they pick things up. You know, that's all I can tell you about that. I didn't think it was a bad childhood, though. I mean, that was my normal. A lot of us come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, we come from all walks of lives, and, you know, there's just all manner of different things, and you know, and that's their normal. I kind of grew up on a ranch. That's where I live now. I mean, that's my home. And my dad moved around a lot because of his work, and so I would go to school at different communities. Like every 2 years, we were going to another town. And I pretty much went to school there, but I never got to know anybody in the school very well. But home for me was the ranch. And Pop wasn't around a lot, and Mom was never around. And so pretty much my grandparents raised me, you know. And You know, and they were good people. They were very good people. Although, you know, historically, Grandpa was a bootlegger, and he had a reputation of being kind of mean. And Grandma was this fiery Irish lady, and she grew up in Monterey back in the day, and he grew up in Eureka. And, you know, it was just, they were a little tougher than most people. They grew up in times when things were hard. But they showed me a great deal of care and love in their way. And so, you know, I'm sure that had something to do with my upbringing and some of my goofiness, but really didn't make me an alcoholic, you know. What I'm going to try to do, the best of my ability, is tell you why I think I'm an alcoholic. Because here's the deal. I don't know if you are or you're not. And there's different kinds of alcoholics. That'll trip you up, right? There's the kind that can stop with sufficient reason. My grandfather was that way. He would get with his buddy, and they would drink a bottle of Kessler's and play cribbage until the bottle was gone, and then they would go to work in the morning. You know? And when it was time to go to work, he went to work. And when it was time to pay the bills, he paid the bills. When he took care of the family, he did all that stuff. I could never get close to anything like that. He was, sometimes they call that a functional alcoholic, whatever. But when it came time for him to stop drinking, because of medical reasons, he stopped. And, you know, so I don't know that he was so much a type 3 alcoholic. If you read the book, it talks about that, you know. My mother, on the other hand, she was full-blown. She was out there. And you know, she had a lot of chaos. And, you know, it was just, there's just something about an alcoholic mother that it just kind of tears a little bit of your soul out, right? You know? And I kind of watched that happen. What it did for me is that I had a little switch inside my head, and I just don't care. And it pops up every once in a while. But the thing about that is that I'm aware of that today. And I have to kind of watch that because it trips people out. You know, they don't like that. They don't like it when you don't show any feelings. It makes them feel kind of weird. But anyway, so I have this family situation, and I'm just living out there in the country. I'm given good morals. I was working on harvesters by the time I was 10 years old. I was working with cattle, and, you know, and the lifestyle that I had, most people can't relate to, really. You know, no one's done that, which is no big deal. I don't know what it's like to grow up in Compton, right? So, you know, it's kind of the same difference. But I did that, and, you know, alcohol started becoming an answer about the time I was in high school. And it was times when I was drinking, and all of a sudden, I just felt like I belonged. Everybody that comes up here has some sort of, you know, it does something for me. You know, it also does something to me, right? Father Hillary used to say, I'm Father Hillary and I'm an alcoholic, and that's who and what I am. And that's kind of the deal for me, is that it took a while to figure that out. And there's some of you here that are alcoholics. Some of you are not. Some of you are still trying to figure it out. And what I found out is that when you create an atmosphere where one alcoholic can talk to another alcoholic, there's something that happens that gets through all that roadblock that I had, because no one could talk to me. You can't tell me. You cannot tell me. You could see the evidence right at my feet, and I'm just, you know, I don't care. But when I came to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting at one time, and for the first time I was sitting there, and I thought, just maybe you guys understand. Maybe, I don't know, you know, I don't know what I am. How would I know, you know? You know, so fast forward, I'm growing up as a kid. We called it partying. I drank as much as I could. There was a few instances in high school. I caught myself on fire twice. You think that's funny? Yeah, one time I took some animal tranquilizers and I bent over an alcohol lamp and they were putting me out. Yeah, I know. It's just, you had to be there. And before we go any farther, I am no expert on alcoholism and that kind of stuff. I'm not educated in that thing. I don't get paid for any of this kind of stuff. You know, this is just something that when I do things like this, it's just me putting a little bit down on that policy I have with God in that I can stay sober another day. This is what we do. We give for free and for fun is what I was told. And, you know, and we heard some great speakers this weekend, you know. Now some people thought they were great, not, you know, and some not. And that's the deal here is not everybody is meant to hear everybody, you know. There's just certain people, and so I don't have to worry about if I'm going to impress you or I'm going to have some sort of wordsmith thing to get you going in a certain direction. All I have to do is tell you the truth about myself the best I can. And if you're alcoholic, like me, then you're probably going to identify. And the only answer or solution I've ever had for that is a spiritual one that comes in the form of Alcoholics Anonymous. Some people get sober in churches, and there's nothing wrong with that. Some people get sober in other things. You know, Schick Shaddell, you know, one of the treatment facilities, they have this list of people that have successfully completed their program. And as far as they're concerned, they've solved their problem. You know, I'm of the small percentage that none of that works for. You know, as hard as I want to not do that stuff, as hard as I want to not drink, as hard as I want to not screw up, I just can't. You know, just something happens. And it's not because there's a bar on the corner and I pass by it, although it looks like that. What it is that I have something inside of me. The book says that at certain times, I can't bring into sufficient force the memory of a month, a week, or even a day ago of all the stuff that has happened to me. And I'll tell you a few stories about that, and then we'll get on to sobriety. So I was this troubled kid, sort of. I barely eked out a D average going through school. And then I figured I'd join the Navy, so I joined the Navy. And what ended up happening is I'm on the ship, and you know, and I've got a fresh start, because a lot of us like that, right? You know, we're going to start over again. We're going to go to a new state. So I have a fresh start, and I'm polished up, and I'm buffing my shoes, and I'm creasing my pants, and I'm yes sir, no sir. And you know, and then I found these people that are just like me, and we call it steaming in the Navy. You just go off the ship and then spend all your money in the bar, really. And you know, and all of a sudden I just started going downhill. And I started making excuses for the way I was behaving, because you know what, they're never gonna let you get ahead in this thing anyway. And you know, there's always somebody that's, you know, they're kind of a brown noser and they're going to knock you out of the way. And I just had this sour grapes kind of a deal. And, you know, the only thing that got me out of that was another drink. And even back then. But I didn't think I had a problem. So the reason I think I'm an alcoholic, looking back, the first real evidence is I was in a thing called Reftre. We were in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And we do all this stuff on the ship so that we can be ready to fight a war if we need to, right? We practice on shooting things, and we practice on fixing things. And I was in the magazine with all these other guys, and we were to load the ammunition, 5-inch cannon. And so I'm down there, and I have a really bad hangover. And it was so bad that I had them load the wrong ammo into the cannon. And they were very upset about that. You know, it's like, you know, you could have blown up the ship. And I go, well, you're just making too big of a thing out of this. You really are. And anyways, you know, I got chewed out, and I got chewed out, and I got chewed out. And then the ship pulled up to the dock, and the brow went across, and they let me go. And there's nothing like the anticipation of your first drink. You know, when you waited all day long, and just, you know, it's at your throat, and you gotta, you know, I gotta get rid of this, whatever it is. And I make it to the package store, I get a bottle of rum, I'm sitting on this seawall, and I take a couple pulls off of this bottle, and this is why I think I'm an alcoholic, is that instantaneously, my thoughts were all these chewing outs and all these things to, it could have happened to anybody. Alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for all these other people. You know, if you're really honest with yourself, you know, and if you're a person that has a blackout, if you ever drink after your first blackout, that's pretty crazy. If you ever drank enough to where you have no memory of what you did, and you knew that if you took another drink and that's possible, normal people don't drink. We do. We just want to figure out how, right? We wanted to figure out, I got it this time. You know, I remember one guy who was in a meeting, he says, I figured it out. You got to eat a stick of butter before you go drinking. Because that was a horrible, you know. And I identify with the guy. He's like, yeah, you know. It's just we try every conceivable way of trying to get around and trying to get past that thing. But there's something about alcoholics of my type, and that's who I'm speaking to, is that there's nothing that's going to help us. You know, knowledge is not going to help us. I knew everything I needed to know about staying sober in my first 30 days. I did. It's just very repetitive around here, right? We're always, seems like. But I need to hear it, and I need to be a part of that. It's like a choir. You know, we got the tenors, we got the basses, we got the sopranos, and we're all kind of having this thing going on. And, you know, it sounds like a kind of a jumble, and then it comes together. And there's a message in the middle of that thing. Alcoholics Anonymous works, and it works very well. So anyway, I do this thing in the Navy, and I get in a lot of trouble off and on. And I'll tell you a couple of the stories. So first one everybody likes to hear is we were in Dubrovnik, Yugoslavia, and I'd be partying for like 3 or 4 days, and I get back on the ship and a little bit tired, and we pull out and the sun is shining, and there's like this place where they put the lines, and it's almost like a hammock. And so I just kind of, you know, take a nap kind of thing. And next thing I know, the man overboard alarm's going off, and the ship's doing this hard turn, and they're throwing markers out in the water, and everybody goes to their station because you're looking for the guy that fell off the ship. And so we're all looking around, and my boss comes around the corner as I'm at my station, and he said some things I can't repeat at the podium, and stormed off. And he says, the only thing I can tell you is that if you're a member of your own search party, you're an alcoholic. Where is that guy? He wouldn't talk to me for a week. And, you know, it's like, it wasn't like I was robbing banks or taking out. I was just this pass out in the corner, you can't depend on me kind of guy. You know, I wasn't creating a lot of mayhem, a little bit, not too much. And I just accepted that as my life. This was just going to be the way I'm going to be. That's it. And I surrendered to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. There's nothing you can do about it. You know, no matter what you say, I know you mean well. And you look at me and you say, why do you do that to yourself? And I don't even have the wherewithal to just say, I know. And then I got to the point where I just couldn't talk to people. I eventually got out of the Navy. There's a lot of other things that happened there, but, you know, it's sufficient to say it was not a good thing. And so I had this plan. I was going to move back to the ranch, and I was going to start a pot plantation. I was just about 40 years ahead of my... Now you can do that, right? Now I'm going to... Not anymore. Not in those days. So, but I ran out of gas in Colorado, and my mom was living there. And, you know, and she's sober like 8 years. And, you know, and it broke her heart that her son was being just like her. She didn't know what to do about it. So she said, you know, why don't you stay here? Maybe Pete, my stepdad, maybe he can use some help with painting. He was a house painter. And so I did that, and I lived on her couch. And You know, and I was doing like I always do. I go to the bar, shoot pool, drink, and all those kinds of things. And then one day she says, you know, I can't stand to watch kill yourself anymore. You know, and it's tough for a mother to say that, you know, to the son that she knew she caused that problem. In her heart, that's the way she felt. And, you know, and where my mind was at, you utilize that as far as you can. But there comes a point where you lose everything. And for me, that's what I needed to do. You know, I think most alcoholics do better when there's no more opportunities, when it's all done. I can't turn to any person. There's nobody left. I can't even bring up enough gumption to go talk to somebody. Now, I was the star tenor at the Craig, Colorado Assembly of God Church, you know, and they loved me. And, you know, and they would pray on me, and they would lay hands on me, and they would anoint me with oil. And they did everything in their program that they knew to help me in my alcoholism. They didn't know what it was. They just knew that I was in bad shape. I would be in the choir, and I have to hang onto my seat because sometimes you get a head rush, you know, and you might just fall out on the stage. And so I just had to hang on really tight. I could sing, but I couldn't do anything else, you know, and then I'd kind of make my way to the seat. And everybody had compassion, and there was nothing wrong with those people. Their program was perfectly okay for them. You know, I don't bash churches, not at all. They did everything that they could do. And I think maybe in hindsight, it seemed like every time one of those episodes would happen where I was the center of attention, that my stepdad would end up coming up to my little trailer. I lived out in the prairie in Colorado. It was just my little 20-foot trailer. And you in there, Bill? Now, there's just my car. I'm either dead or I'm in there, right? Because my car is there. He'd say, you want to go to a meeting? I go, I wonder why he would think I would want to go to a meeting. And then one day, I had echoes in my ears. It was just my own voice, and it was just always going on and on and on. I'm living in this little trailer. I like to eat beans a lot. One time I put a pot of beans on, and it got so smoky, I almost suffocated. That's kind of how I was living. One time, I'm sitting there, and a bag fell over in the sink. And I came to one time, and there was like about a 2-foot sprout coming out of the sink. And every time one of those things happened, a little bit of me died. And I know if you're alcoholic, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Nickel and dime. Why did I do that? How did that happen? Which way did that go? See, we alcoholics, we know that feeling. Those guys out there didn't know that. People in the church, they didn't know. They meant well. They would have done anything, but they didn't know how to do it. They didn't know what to do. They knew God was the answer, but they didn't know how to get me past the goal line, right? But anyway, Pete would come by. And one day I just went because I was tired of my own. I didn't even want to be with myself. I couldn't stand it. I just couldn't be there one more minute. Not one more minute. And so I went to this meeting. And I was sitting there, and this guy, he was all grizzled and all hair. He just looked like a cartoon character, really. All you saw was this grizzled hair and two eyes, and I think there was a mouth in there somewhere. And he said, this thing doesn't work if you need it. It works if you want it. Now, I don't even know if that's true, but, you know, because we have debates about that in AA. We want to define the exact word and the meaning of the thing, right? We get out the big book and we debate over what that "and" meant in the sentence. But the reality was is that there was something about that stuck in my head, and nothing stuck in my head during that period of time. I couldn't remember a name. I couldn't remember what day it was. I just kind of moved around. If someone gave me a little job, I'd go do it, you know. But I wasn't functional. Not really. And I heard it, and it gave me some hope. See, I don't know. I could be talking about apples, and if you're alcoholic, you might hear oranges. And you'll come up to me and say, I really like what you said about oranges, right? And I just thank him, say, that's good. You know, I'm glad you got something out of it. Because there's something about the Spirit of God that works through us. Because I've been through this experience, and if you're an alcoholic and you've been through these things, now I can look you dead in the eye and say, I know how you feel. And mean it. Because there's a lot of well-meaning people out there, and they say, I know how you feel. And no, you don't. There's nothing wrong with you about that. It's just that you don't know. And we do. And, you know, and it's not like we're better or worse than. It's just that God created this for people like us. That's what happened. That's what I believe anyway. So, anyway, I go back in the Navy. And after I get sober, I go to the meetings. And I'm still self-centered to the extreme. And what ended up happening is I went back in the Navy and then all these problems. This person's my problem. That system's my problem. That on and on and on. You know, and then there's all these brown nosers that are, you know, getting points and they're getting awards. And, you know, and I work harder than that guy. And, you know, and it's all between my ears. Anyway, I get this guy, Johnny's my sponsor. And what ended up happening is that he had me write a letter about what my experience was in AA up to that time, which was about 6 years. And he says, well, Bill, you've never been sponsored. And I was very angry because I blamed people for sponsorship for years, right? Joe's my sponsor. Sam's my sponsor. You know, I always had somebody I could blame. And he goes, no, you've never been sponsored. It's an active thing, you know? It's a connection between two people. And they share their experience with you. And then you do certain things. And in your experience, and you tell them back. And between your experiences, you figure out what's true and what's not true. Because when we come here, I didn't know what was true. I didn't know what was up. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I didn't know what sobriety was. I didn't know what gratitude was. All those words were so foreign to me. I didn't know what they were. But when I started experiencing them, then they would say, well, you know, that's serenity or that's gratitude. And I didn't know. So anyway, he started spoon feeding me Alcoholics Anonymous in the way that he could. And I am on the ship. And I because of my self-centered fear, I created kind of a mess. I got demoted, not position-wise, but I mean not pay-wise, but just positionally. And so I was going to quit and I was going to get out, and he convinced me to stay. And it was the first time in my life that I ever listened to another human being. I said, okay, I'm tired of fighting. I'm just tired of fighting. Okay, I'll do what you say. I don't think it's going to work out well, but I don't care. And so I did that. And it didn't like get wonderful the next day, and it wasn't a bunch of unicorns and cotton candy. It wasn't that way at all. Because I pissed off a lot of people. And what ended up happening is I would say, do you know? And he'd go, just clean your side of the street, and he'd hang up. And I don't know how long that went, but it went on for a little while. And ended up happening is that they put me back in a place where I started. Like when you're a gunner's mate in the Navy, you start in the armory, and you know, and then you work your way into the cannons and the bigger equipments and stuff. And I had got demoted all the way back to the armory. So I'm bored, and I'm chipping, and I'm scraping, just like what we do here, you know? We clean up the bathrooms. We pick up cigarette butts. We clean the floors. Everything I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I just transferred that into my job. And what ended up happening was that, and one day the boss comes in and says, oh, this looks pretty good. Can you do that across the hall? You know, sure. And I did it over there. And said, can you do that for the forward gun mount? Yeah, I guess I can. And can you do that for the Afghan now? Yeah, I guess I can. And then they put me in charge of the division. And it was probably, I don't think it was 6 or 7 months, really. It just seemed like forever. But, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, all this thing, like you hear people say in AA, I've learned to love me. And it's always been weird to me. Because, you know, it's like my truth. Now, if I am psychotic, my truth is not so good. Right? It's your fault. And that's my truth. Right? You've never heard that name? Ah, you got to go to more meetings. But you're the reason I'm this way. And what ended up happening is that I just put all that aside and I did my job. And and then we're on a cruise. We're going to Australia, actually. And then right midway there, we got a message saying that Kuwait was invaded and we're going to war. You know, and so, okay. By this time, I'm running the whole division, making sure all the maintenance is being done on all the equipment. You know, it's nothing really earth-shattering. If you clean something and keep it clean, it's not that hard to keep clean, right? It's one of those things. And so, you know, all the weapons that I was in charge of and all the ammunition and all those things, all everything was taken care of. It was just a matter of keeping it up, you know, and then just being focused on getting the job done. And it's amazing how much free time you have when you do that. And when you first look at it, it's like, nah, it's going to be too much trouble. Anyway, all the equipment is up and ready to go, and we were ready to go do our mission. And we did it. We went to the Persian Gulf. We were the first warship in the Persian Gulf, and we did our missions. And, you know, and everything worked like it was supposed to. And our staff was like 50% undermanned because we were going to Australia, right? You know, they didn't know we were going to go to war. And so, you know, it's like, I didn't think much about it. It's kind of like when you're doing job in the meeting here, right? Or you're doing your job at the dealership, or you're doing your job at the real estate office, whatever it is. You're just doing your job, and all of a sudden they're going, man, you're like top salesperson, or you this. And what ended up happening is, you know, we're having an assembly, and they called me up and said, Pastor James, it gives me great pleasure to give you a Navy Achievement Medal. And then I got a second one. And I went to my sponsor, and I was like, look what I got. And he said, no, that's what AA got. AA got you now. And, you know, he's right. You know, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous showing me how to be, and just simple things, like dressing, you know. It's the best goodwill had. Anyway, they showed me a lot of stuff. I didn't know how to talk to people. They taught me how to talk to people, you know, and have conversations where it's not the F word every other word. My sponsor, he got sober in prison, and somebody told him in prison, this is, you know what cussing is? And he goes, no, what? He goes, it's a crutch for a conversational cripple. And so that's the message I got. Yeah. Because, you know, sailors have a way of talking, and we're known for it. One time I was kicked out of a tattoo parlor for my language. In Lodi. That was an achievement. And so, but, you know, I learned how to become a decent human being here. Now, some of you come here. Some of you have all those attributes. You know, a lot of us don't. Or maybe we put them on the back burner. I mean, I had some good stuff when I was growing up on the ranch, but I set that all aside. I did. And I had to relearn a lot of things. And those were the things, you know. And it was an amazing thing. How much time we got here? 6 minutes, okay. So I got this bad attitude. I'm going through this process of kind of cleaning up my act. And, you know, and so Johnny asked me, so what are you doing on the ship? And I said, well, you know, I don't do much because I'm the armorer. And so whenever anything happens on the ship, I just make sure that the weapons are safe and all that. So don't they have training for other things? I said, yeah, but I don't need to go to those. He says, really? He says, you should go to those. And I go, okay, I will. So all of a sudden, I started doing all the training, you know, how to put out fires, and you learn all the piping in the ship, and, you know, and how this works and how that works. And, You know, and it's just a general education, but it's good to know because there's no one out there, there's nobody that's going to come around the block and help you put out a fire. You're it, right? And so we're on the ship and we're leaving out of Hawaii and we're headed for Long Beach, is where I was stationed. And we call it Tiger Cruise. That's where a lot of people fly home to be with their spouses, and then there's open bunks, and then you invite your family members to stay on the ship, and then it's kind of like a party all the way across. And we're, all the hatches are open, the sun is shining, they're having barbecues every day, and my guys are getting everything cleaned up, because if everything's clean and shiny and all that, then you can disappear for a day or two and no one's going to care. So my guys down in the magazine, now imagine a room like this size, and it's all full of ammunition, high explosives. And there's this fire system, and this fire system has so much pressure that if it goes off, instantaneously there's going to be a saltwater fog so thick you can't breathe. That's because they don't want their magazines to blow up. And so if that happens, you have to put a cloth over your face just so you can get to a hatch somewhere and get out of there. That's how saturated it is. You can't see, you know. And what happened is these guys, all the hatches were open, they were down in there, and the guy tripped off the sprinkler system accidentally. And the whole aft end of the ship was just immediately with this fog. I couldn't see. I was standing right above, I was standing a deck above this guy. I knew immediately what happened. But because I went to the training, I knew exactly where the valve was. And I turned around, and I reached, and I kept reaching, and I found it, and I pulled it down, and everything just stopped, you know, and disaster averted. So by the time I had done that, there was already 2 foot of water. And because all the hatches were open, it would have flooded the whole aft end of the ship. I didn't think much about it because not much happened. I chewed the guy out, and he cleaned up the water. You know, and I got into port, and I was telling Johnny about it. He says, isn't that amazing that when you were drinking, you almost sank a ship. And in sobriety, you saved a ship. And this is my message to you guys, really. If you're alcoholic and you got something that's eating your soul, that you've done something to some loved one, some boss, some friend, and you know that you can never make it right, because when I was on that ship, I did a lot of things I wasn't supposed to do. A lot of things. In fact, we were up in Seattle, and I got to show Tracy a type of ship that I was on, you know, and it brought back all these memories. It was just like, oh yeah, smoked dope there, drank over there. But the thing of it was, is that Alcoholics Anonymous, it might take a while, but there's always a way to make things right. My sponsor felt responsible for his brother's death, and yet AA showed him a way to live so that he could make it day by day. And I think that's really the message here. Whatever's eating you out of your soul and that sort of thing, and you're never going to make it, the thing of it is that we don't know, other than I'm positive. But if you're alcoholic like I am, God will give you a way out. Thank you.